I'll explain the characters. I do Reverend Deuteronomy Skaggs, who's a preacher. You can imagine that. He's kind of a southern type preacher. Don't make me holler. Don't make me shout. I want you to turn them pockets inside out. That kind of a guy, you know. Shoot thy lute to the Lord. He talks about the green salad of salvation. You see these guys on TV all the time, and he's one of those guys. I do Ranger Bob, and Earl Pitts is like, you know what makes me sick? He's a redneck, but he's a redneck. Well, he has a conscience, but you know, you're just not sure of it. But he's a red. I can't take him to the degree I'd like to, you know, because I'm on the radio. But he's kind of like he's a little sinister, you know. When you listen to this guy, you know, the problem is, and here's the bit: when you're driving along and you hear Earl Pitts, and you start to agree with him, you go, well, yeah, he's right. What am I doing? Because he's going, you know what makes me sick? You know what makes me so angry? I just want to, what's the best one? You know what makes me so angry? I just want to super glue my tongue to a fire hydrant, drop my pants, spread alcohol all over my butt cheeks, and wait for a pack of wild pit bulls to come along and lick it off. You know, say, oh, he's pissed. You know? But I also do a lot of impressions and things like that, too. Yeah.
What motivated you, or what did you use as inspiration for a lot of your characters? I know for the Reverend, him, and I know Big Fat, who you used.
Now, Big Fat came from two people. He's a big fat balling guy with a stubby cigar in his mouth and his pants half zip, and this time I'm being honest with you. He always says, this time I'm being honest with you. What about all those other times, you know? Because see, and that came from, this guy was the mayor of Lebanon, Kentucky. And I used to do these gigs. I'd go down there for, well, I worked at Wacky in Louisville, and we had what we call, at the time we called them hops. You know, they would advertise on the air, and then you would go down and get on stage. Here's a band, and give you $75, you'd leave. You know, it's a pretty good little thing, you know. So I went, but Hylene George, he would stand there, and he would stand, and his pants were always half zipped, and he had a cigar in his mouth. And, you know, if you were 13 years old and had protuberances on your chest, you could drink at his bar. And so I always came back in my mind, and then I had a radio station manager who would tell you, Gary, now this time I'm being honest with you. And so I put the two together, and he became one character. What he does is he interrupts records on radio to make it look like a set for a charity for Ethiopian chickens or something like that, you know. And he goes on, he did the, he's on the tapes this year, he did the Elton John Candle in the Wind funeral set, where he would send you Elton John's song, Funeral in the Wind, and then when he comes in, you know, you were, what's the lyrics? What's the first line? I can't remember the first lyrics. Yeah. Anybody know? Oh.
Goodbye, yeah.
Goodbye. Here we go. Goodbye. Norman Hershowitz of Cleveland, Ohio. And you play this at the funeral, and it'd be just like Lady Di's funeral. You know? And he goes on, and you were, you know, held responsible for bringing the worms on fishing trips. Na, 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 na. So it's pretty, you know, conceptually, like I say, I don't know if it would fit with Bob and Tom, but it fits with, you know, our audience. And I won't say you have to be more intelligent. You just have to know more about what's going on, is all. Yeah.
Do you do Gilbert live, or do you tape it?
I tape it, yeah.
How many takes to get somebody that will actually stay on the phone?
Funny thing about Gilbert Gnarly is, one. You know, I never do more than one with Gilbert. You know why? He's such a pathetic old guy. You
know, it's just, he's got an abnormal problem. And he calls up, he lives at the St. Piazzadora Golden Buckeye Retirement Community.
And I wanted to be caught once. So I thought, there is no St. Piazzadora. You know who Piazzadora? She's this chick her boyfriend, who had a lot of money, put her on billboards in Hollywood singing, and, you know. And so I called the Archdiocese in Chicago one time, and I got a hold of the father there, you know. So I was kidding with Doc. I said, "This time, I want to get caught. I want him to say there's no St. Piazzadora." And Doc says, "Okay, we're on the air." You know, and I said, "Yeah,
hello, my name is Gilbert Darling, Gnarly.
And I'm going on about this and that. I'm
calling from the St. Piazzadora Golden Buckeye Retirement Community."
And the father goes, Yes, my son. And I went, there's no St. Theodore, damn it! And I've had people call up, send me bills. I don't know how Gilbert Gnarly gets on mailing lists, but I'm on all kinds of mailing lists. I get Tupperware. I'll be damn if I'm going to pay for it or send it back. I got more to do than send their crap back to them, so I just toss
it. Has anyone ever said, oh, hi, Gary, to you?
Yeah, I got it. I got it a couple of times. I'll tell you what, Ed Bradley's secretary. You know Ed Bradley from 60 Minutes? Gilbert decided for one period of his life, that's who the book I'm going to write about will be Gilbert's life. He decided at one point that Ed Bradley had the answer to everything. He saw Ed on TV, man. Ed was the man. He knew everything. And so I talked to his secretary about once a week for 6 months. And now, let me say right off, what I'm doing is illegal. You know? You notice I said, illegal. You're supposed to identify that you're on the air with somebody before you do anything. Now, the way I do it is a little like jaywalking. Okay, you know the Jerky Boys, right? Well, when the Jerky Boys get somebody on the phone, they piss people off. Gilbert never pisses anybody off. You get their reaction to this weird person. And I did this with her for so long, and then some idiot called and said, boy, that was really funny, you on the radio. So she goes, what are you talking about? She had no idea, of course, because I never said it, so I couldn't call her back, right? And so then the next time I called her, I said, you know, hello, my name is, I know this is you, Gary Burbank. I said, well, how'd you know? And she sounds kind of PO'd, you know, and she said, you know, I could sue you and your radio station. I'm like, how mad are you? And she said, she just all of a sudden stopped. She said, I wouldn't do that because you really made me laugh. That was very funny, you know, and I'm like, whew, thank God. You know? So I sent her some flowers and never called her again. You know? And if it had been a guy to send him flowers, anyway. That situation, you know, came up. Menza, the chapter of Menza caught me in Boston. I called up there, and somehow somebody had sent them some tapes and some stuff that we had done. And they evidently think I'm more intelligent than I am, so they played them for each other. You know? But they knew. But not very often. I always try to call somewhere like, you know, so I know someplace like when we were syndicated, I had to call someplace I knew we weren't, you know, and so I would do that. And the secret is never to piss anybody off. Talking about Ed Bradley's secretary, one time Bradley knew about Gilbert because this guy told me, oh yeah, Gilbert too, when George Bush was running for president, the Secret Service here got a call from the branch in Washington with a list of subversive characters in the Cincinnati area.
No.
Gnarly was on there, man. And this guy calls me up, the Secret Service guy that I knew, and he said, Gary, Gilbert Gnarly's right there on that list of characters. And I'm like, whoa, no kidding. And he said, yeah. He said, don't worry, we told him he was harmless and we had him under surveillance, you know. And so I got by with that one, you know. But that was kind of scary too. Gilbert, one of my favorite things, Gilbert wanted to be Jewish at one point. He calls a rabbi saying, I'm tired of people referring to me as a genital. I think it's Gentile.
Oh, it's a genital.
And so you see, the humor is like it's back at him. Very rarely do I ever, point. I did one time. There was a guy. It was a psychic, and this is one of the best calls. And this psychic, the whole time, the psychic has Gilbert on the phone. He's thinking he's reeling this guy in, going to get some money. Well, as it turned out, Gilbert didn't have. He had lost a lottery ticket, and it had paid off hundreds of thousands and something like that. And he convinced the guy that he had the right ticket, but he didn't know where it was. Well, in the conversation that I had with the guy as Gilbert, I dropped some hints as to where the ticket was. Very, you know, it was. I forgot what the hint was. The ticket was found in a coat pocket that. The lady that does his clothes puts under his mattress to press it. So as I was saying, you know, but I didn't say it at one time. I just kept dropping the hints. And the guy was smart enough to carry it out, you know. So finally the guy says, okay, you've got to send me some money because I've got to have it. I've got to have the ticket today. This is the final day. And so the guy finally says, okay, look. He says, he's going to take this old man for some money. He says, tell you what. He says, if you promise, I swear, you know, I've got you, I know you're out, I will send you, I'll give you, let's make a deal now. You give me one quarter of the lottery or something like that, and I think I can help you. He goes, okay, you got it. All right. So the guy says, all right, go look under the mattress in your blue coat that you wear, and look in so-and-so pocket, which I'd already said that that's where it was. But in a way that he didn't know, he goes, okay. But he's, this guy thought he was this poor old fool that didn't know. And so I said, I'll go look down. So I put the phone down, and I walk away from it, of course, you know, act like I'm going. And then I go, oh, thank God, wonderful, John, yay. And he goes, like, hello. And he goes, okay, you found it. He goes, no, I didn't find it. He goes, you did so, I heard you. No, I was just thinking I was going to have pimento cheese for lunch. And so the, you know, and so that guy would have been pissed, but you know, I made sure he didn't know. Yeah.
How much stuff do you do for your restaurant? I mean, with juggling with, you know, your show and everything else. I mean, what kind of interaction do you have with your restaurant?
I don't do the business part of it. I have to admit to being a comedy savant, you know, to a degree. And I'm into food. I'm into cooking, and it's kind of a hobby of mine. And so that's a lot of what I do. But the business part of it, I'm pretty stupid, you know. And I have to trust the people that run it. And you're at the mercy of someone else. And as of yet, we have Jimmy Girardi runs them now, who owns Jay's and stuff like that. And they're very good, I think. And the last people were kind of strange. We, you know, it would have done a lot better if I'd have, you know, had the right person in. But I think we do now. And as far as my involvement is, I talk to them on the way to work, you know, I get on the phone, that's when I do my phoning of the restaurant, and I have an ad agency too. And Earl is in syndication. I have done better with Earl Pitts in syndication, monetarily wise, than I have anything. You know, it's just quietly, he's been like 150 markets for, you know, 10, 15 years, you know, and it just works very well, yeah.
One of the things I'm interested in is comedy syndication, and do you see a trend whereby the type of thing you do is coming back? Because you said you're one of the few that does it now.
No, I'm sorry, I don't see that. I wish I did. You know, I see comedy, but as far as syndicated comedy and short-form programming is what you're talking about. What I see is this, is like there's a need for people on the air to have material. We had a thing at the agency called the Fax Attack. This guy, he since went on to Hollywood and is a writer there, and they still do it, but it's a bigger company took it. But he's doing very well with it. And there's a need for that kind of thing, faxed material. But as far as, there is probably a need. You know, some of the morning zoo type shows, I don't know if they call them zoos anymore, but the Q102 type shows, they use some of that material. It just depends on the character you come up with. It depends on how much it's needed and that kind of thing, I think. You know? Yeah.
Have you ever done a female character?
Yeah, I do. My falsetto is not what it used to be. I don't know what happens with age, man, but, you know, I used to do, you know, a lot of female characters, but I do some every now. I do Astley Bidet, who does is a newscaster. I do Leah Burns, who has been doing our stuff. She's now producing the morning show at EBN. And since we're hiring somebody, in fact, coming in Tuesday. I didn't have a name for me. I got to think of a good name. She's a big girl. I was thinking Babezilla. Something I don't know. I'm usually great at naming people on the air. I've named a lot of guys, but I cannot name. I can't name a woman. I got to think of a good name. If you guys have a good name, if you have a good name, you might want to keep it for yourself. But I got to come up with something strange. I named Buzz Fechtel and his dancing parakeets. Isn't that a great name? You know, it's a funny thing. He's all pissed about his name all the time. I said, man, everybody remembers you, you know. And they did. It was a real stupid name, but they always remember the stupid name. You know, if it was Lance Romance, you know, you may not remember, but if it's Senior Buddy Whiplash, you know, people might remember that. You know? I wish I had enough sense to have named myself something weird, you know, but I didn't. Yeah. Yeah.
Gary, the other day when I was talking to you about your characters, I want you to tell them what you were telling me when you're doing these voiceovers. How you get mentally into it, how you get that voice to come out that you're looking for?
Drugs. No, whiskey. No. What you do is you don't... If you want to do voices and things, you know, you can ask any impressionist. It's a lot easier to do an impression of someone doing an impression. You know what I'm saying? Like, I couldn't do Ronald Reagan when it was time to do Ronald Reagan. Damn it, I had to do him. I've always done everybody else. I do probably one of the, I have to get behind something to see it. But I do a real good Clinton, probably the best, you know, that I've heard so far on it. I've heard one guy do a better one.
Another guy on Conan.
Where now?
A guy on Conan.
And I haven't seen him. Does he do it too? But he does a visual problem.
They do that satellite, they have a picture, and then they just show the lips.
The lips, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, but they still use that as a visual thing. You can see it. The hard thing to do is do an impression on... Okay, you know Dan Aykroyd, right? Who was with Saturday Night? Okay, Dan Aykroyd used to do Jimmy Carter, and I thought it was the best I'd ever seen. I couldn't believe it. Man, it's a good Jimmy Carter. And then he puts a record out of him doing Jimmy Carter, and it didn't sound anything like him. And that's the difference in our medium and their medium, if their medium is TV. When we do an impression, unless it is a reasonable facsimile, which is you get with Rob Bartlett on Don Imus. I mean, that guy's, you know, his character's not even close, you know. But you have to do it good. You have to sound better than they sound. You know, like, I bet you take that guy on Conan, and you take him and you put him opposite, say, you know, a great impressionist, and I bet you that visually he's using, and that's a great art. I mean, to do it visually, I wish I could do it, and I can't. You got to sit in front of a mirror for a long time, and I never could stand to do that. You know,
Bill Clinton.
I do Bill Clinton. Now, there's different kinds of Clinton. when you do, like I said, you got to hear it. It's not so much saying it, but as I hear, when Bill Clinton is talking to a lot of people and his voice is like this here, he talks like this. When he's probably in a room somewhere with people, it's more like this here. He's got it down like this, and he'll talk like this. And there's just different ways of doing it, you see. And if he's at a town meeting, he's somewhere in between them. And so you have to gear, like if you're doing the bit, then the bit has to be, like if the bit is him doing a speech, then if he's doing a radio address, I pull back some. If he's talking candidly, then I pull back even more and get that kind of thing in his voice. See, the reason y'all think he mostly sounds like this is because this is the easiest one to do, because anybody can do this. You know, and so you've heard a lot of impressionists do that part there.
You see.
Huh?
How do you think he sounds when Hillary's running his life?
Mostly says, "Oh, she's probably." But if you know, like now, if I get behind there and start doing it, you'll know immediately who I'm doing. You know, but looking at me and hearing the voice come out doesn't work. You know, and I'm the first one to admit that. Now I take that little thing and I put it in front of my face as Bill Clinton. It's going to sound, you know, it's going to sound a lot better. It's funny. But I guess the point is, in radio, you have to be able to do the voice. Unless you let us know it's a reasonable facsimile. You know, I do Bob Dylan. And I do Howlin' Blind, Muddy Slim, Yo, 60-Minute Jelly Belly, Toe Jam Man. Now, I've been doing this for like a long time. When I was a drummer, I worked with Jimmy Reed. I worked with some blues guys. Bobby Blue Bland. I worked with some guys like that. And I got to know them, and that's what I'm doing. I'm doing those people that I knew, you know. And so that helps me some, because I saw them, I heard them, I know how they sound. And I don't even play harmonica. But when I get in that character, you guys have seen it. When I get in that character, I pick up harmonica and I play. And I play with some of the best blues guys in town. I haven't really shamed myself, but maybe once. You know? And that time I just had the wrong key out and I threw the harmonica against the wall and made it into a joke, you know? Fortunately for me, I can do that, you know, but he's got to play good. And when I do Dylan, you know, you don't have to play that on guitar to play Dylan, but I think what the answer to your question is, when you're doing a character, you have to hear. You have to hear what the character is saying, you know, to you and how he sounds. And then, just let it come out. And you have to practice a little bit, you know. You don't have to stand in front of a mirror just when you're driving, you know. Keep doing it for yourself, and pretty soon you'll think you got it. You won't. But you'll start doing it, and people will be kind. They'll go, But then if you keep doing it, you know, they'll start believing you, by God, that's what it is, you know. Right now, the people listening to me think that, you know, good God, it sounds like I heard Clinton. I thought it was Clinton. Well, jeez, you know, I know better than that. But they've listened so much that they think that's what he's supposed to sound like. And when he doesn't sound like that, they go, what's wrong with Clinton today? You know? So you can work that scam, too. Yeah.
Kenny G has just recently set a record for the longest sax note. Do you now feel some pressure to hold out the longest word well during the
Well, that's tough. And I go, well, you know. What it is you don't let much out. But it's not circular breathing. That's what Kenny G used that. He does a thing. I tried that with my harmonica the other day, and it went, huh? I held it for how long, Doc? He said, almost 2 seconds, Gary. Yeah. So, you know, what he does is like, you ever seen Dizzy Gillespie, you know, the horn player, I think he's gone over the rainbow to see Dorothy and Toto. Yeah, I mean, he just fills up his whole, you know, cavities everywhere. You know, with air, I know when he gets done, he's got a big fart coming out, too. You know, because he's got his whole body, man. He's got to go, blah, blah, you know. And but what, somehow these guys can go, one guy called me, we had a big talk, and said the word, if you go, and you get your jaws full, and then you can, as you're breathing in, you can blow this stuff out. I tried it, and I swallowed enough phlegm things. Don't have a cold when you do this. You know, but he held it for 45 minutes and 7 seconds, held a note. And but what it doing circular breathing. And the only reason that he had to quit was his spit valve got full. Because in doing that, you know, you're going to be, you know, putting spit in there and stuff, you know. So when the spit valve starts going, he either drowns or stops. Yeah, and nobody wants to drown in their own saliva. Yes.
Have you, I think it's even been hinted at in the paper, have you ever gotten pressure from the Reds and the Bengals and WLW on the air about your bets?
Let me tell you something, guys. You can parody politicians, do lines on politicians, they'll leave you alone. Most anybody. The people who are the biggest egomaniacs in the world are sports team owners.
Marshawn.
Yeah, big time. In place. Marshawn has demanded my job 3 times, man. And they just keep, you know, saying, and they're, I really do, you know, I give the impression I work for morons. They have not always been morons, you know. There are only a few of them there. But since J-Corp's gotten so big, the corporate mentalities come in, and they're probably not morons, and they're doing what they have to do, but as a personality, or as we call talent, you know, I have to react to that. I feel it's my duty to make them do their jobs right, you know. Did I answer that?
No.
What was the question?
Have you gotten a lot of heat from the stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I did. I said Marsh came after my job 3 times. You just used to these 15-minute answers. Yeah. No, I Mike Brown, make no mistake about it. Mike Brown is about as charlatan as anybody could possibly be. He didn't like all my Bengals, and he complained about it. But then, and see, he complained about Andy Furman. That's why he moved the Reds on to Bob. I mean, move the Bengals on to Bob because of Furman. And Furman can get pretty outside. But he came about us, and he was complaining about us. And Dave Martin said, who's the manager, said, you know, and Dave's a pretty smart guy. He says, hey, he said, this guy does some, you know, what, that's legitimate satire that he's doing. And it's nothing worse than a political cartoon in the paper. And if you have us tell him not to do it, you know, then he's going to let people know that he can't do it, and it's going to piss people off at you for being a censor. Whereas Furman, people will probably say, yeah, probably Furman deserves it. Well, I deserve it too. I deserve to be censored. You know, it kind of pisses you off, you know, when they don't complain. But we get by with more probably because it is in the guise. It isn't in the guise. It is satire. It is honest to goodness parody. And it's really, I have a constitutional right to do it, and as long as I don't inflame, but you know what I like to do? I like to do a bit, if it's about somebody, and I know that person is laughing along with it, then I feel really good about it. Because you don't want to lambast someone and make them run and hide. It's only comedy. I mean, I found out a long time ago what I am, and I had to come to grips with it, because when I left Louisville, I came across, this manager came to town who was just an idiot. And I was going to stay in Louisville forever. That's where my wife's parents are from. And I just left Detroit. I was going back there. I said, this is where we're going to stay. You know, and we get this manager in the station who took the station from a 16 to an 8. And he did it because nothing else changed, with just idiotic decisions. But I knew it was. I left before it went down to an 8. But I used to do that. And I've never been fired in radio, and I'm probably the only person that will ever tell you that. But here's the reason. It's because I always saw it coming. I always saw the executive walk in there, and I would talk to him a little bit. I would say, this guy is the moron, you know? And so the thing to do is get out before he ruins everything. I didn't have a chance at LW because I'm, you know, like at my age, I don't want to go start over somewhere else. And at my... I've done well enough to where I'm okay. I don't really need the, you know, you always want the money, but I'm okay. You know, if they say, you know, that's enough, I'm fine. You know, I figure I've stayed longer with this than I meant to do. You know, hell, I meant to at 35. I was going to be on Tortola, man, sucking down a red striped beer, you know, and sailing in the Caribbean. You know, what the hell I'm doing here now? It's cold out there. You know?
This is Reilinger with the U.S. Census List. When are you going to have the Northwestern leads on your menu?
Now, that's a guy it takes some phone calls to get. Doc does Reilly Gert.
He's really good.
Oh, he's wonderful. And Doc really gets into Reilly Gert with a senseless survey. And the funny thing is, he says senseless. Mm-hmm. You're like, yes, this is the U.S. senseless survey. And he starts asking these ridiculous questions.
Yeah.
People say, well, this is crazy. No, ma'am, it's senseless. Well, okay. And then he goes on. But that's what Doc averages, maybe 35 calls to get one, you know, in that respect.
Wow.
But I think we're going to wrap it up. But again, man, good luck to everybody. You know, man, I bet you, you know, that if you the one thing that I said, we've talked about my show and all that stuff, and you'll do your own thing, and you should take from who you can. Don't take all of it, you know. Leave a little bit for the person who did it, but that's best for you, because you don't want to become, if you're listening to me, you don't want to be me, you want to be you. But take from me, take you know, a line. Even watch out for the concepts. I get pissed about the concepts, you know, but take some of the style. But don't take all the style, because you want to put yourself into it. Remember, when the hardest thing in radio... Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
The hardest thing in radio is to be yourself. The hardest thing in radio is to be yourself. I'm not kidding you. You go on the air. I first went on the air at KLPL in Lake Providence. I was talking like this because I wanted to have a deep voice. And it took me maybe a year or two to speak normally. And it took me that long to realize... And gradually back in, you know, to get comfortable enough to do it. Maybe it won't take you that long. Maybe I know people that have walked into it and have been normal right off. Try to be yourself on the air, because when you're yourself on the air, you're going to be better. But always remember that as you learn things, man, you're making more of yourself. You're becoming fatter intellectually. And use that. Use part of me, use part of anybody. But good luck to all of you, man, and I hope you do well. You know?